Thank you very much for speaking with me. Would you like to tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what you're doing at the minute, and maybe a little bit about what you've worked at before?
You should say what I'm wearing.
No, working. Got a sexist comment to begin the interview.
Right, that's whether you're single. I would like to introduce myself. So my name is Andrea. I am originally from Denmark, where I've grown up most of my life. I have worked for UNHCR for about 6 years now. At the moment, I am a protection officer in Mogadishu, in the representation office here. Before that, I was 3 years at headquarters in Geneva, in the Division of International Protection. And before that, I was nearly 3 years in Jordan, where I worked on exclusion. And before that, I worked for the Danish government. If maybe I'll start by speaking a bit about what I see as one of the challenges we have in UNHCR, but I don't think limited to UNHCR, I think probably in the humanitarian community as a whole, and beyond, I'm sure, actually, as well. I think the problem that we're facing is a bit that we're ending up with a bit of gender wars, in the sense that we have certain parts of the workforce, meaning many women, feeling that they are experiencing sexism, they're experiencing harassment or challenges because of their gender in their workspace, in their day-to-day work life. But this is maybe not so evident. It's not something that's talked about so much, and it's sometimes hard to concretize even what makes you feel different as a woman in the workplace. On the other hand, we then have some very visible ways in which women are advantaged. In UNHCR, for example, we have HR policies that make it easier for women to be promoted, for example. So I think what we've been trying to do is to see, as an organization, can see that there are not enough women high up, in general, I guess, in the organization, but certainly up in the higher echelons, and trying to figure out how to address that. And I think what we've done is to look at what is actually a quite complex cultural and structural problem and try to apply a simple fixed solution to it, which is mainly through HR policies. And I think I think we've gone wrong there, and that's a challenge that we need to address differently. I think the reason why we've chosen this approach and not the more tricky one of looking at it as this complex cultural and structural problem is, of course, that changing an organizational culture is really, really tricky, especially in an organization like ours, which is supposed to be blind to issues such as race, religion, gender, nationality, and so on. And I think perhaps we and others have shied a bit away from having this conversation, which we actually do need to start having if we ever want to change something. So the tricky thing, and I guess that's what your question was then really, where do you start? I mean, how can you even start addressing something that is such a complex question when you're dealing with a workforce that is so diverse? And speaking from my own perspective, what I ended up doing when I was at headquarters was to launch this very small, very informal, well, we called it the Sisterhood of Fuck This Shit, which was basically a group of women, as it were, ended up being young women. There were five or six of us only in the beginning, then we branched out a bit, but five or six really as a core, who met up to discuss really how do we experience being women, and how do we feel that affected our work in the organization, which challenges did we see, and try to come up with ways of really addressing that. What happened was, I think I've always been very interested in the gender agenda. So I think I've had many bilateral conversations with colleagues, men and women, but certainly in the women I was speaking to, I felt that certain patterns were beginning to emerge. I was feeling that I was surrounded by these very smart, competent, hardworking women who still were feeling quite insecure about issues, were feeling that they weren't enough, were blaming themselves for issues I felt they were fundamentally not to blame for. And I saw this so often and started seeing it too often in all my friends that I thought, no, we need to, let's get together and talk about what this is. So I sent out an invitation to a group of women saying, do you want to come over tonight? We'll have some wine. Let's talk about what all this is, this whole these issues that we're all facing, these challenges that we're all facing. And then the conversation really started off as that. I mean, it was a lovely evening. We had food, we had wine, we talked about lots of different things. And at some point I said, all right, actually, let's get back to why I sent that invitation out originally and what this is about. And then we started kind of easing into that conversation. And at first, I think obviously it was a little bit uncomfortable. These are issues you're maybe not so used to talking about. And some of them are quite personal. You're talking about your own insecurities. You're talking about where you don't think you're enough, or and you might not agree with the people around the table who you might not know so very well. At the time, I didn't know everyone around the table that well. So it started out quite kind of slowly and cautiously. But quite soon, kind of similar trends emerged. And it was, I think, even just that first evening we met, I think it was very strong for many of us around the table to feel, oh, actually, you are describing exactly how I felt in a meeting last week. So maybe this isn't just me or me being not enough or me being sillier, but maybe there's something larger at play here. And feeling that you have a shared experience was already quite strong there. Then what was interesting to see happened over time, because we then kept up having these meetings, meetings, evenings with wine, whatever you want to call them. But we kept on meeting with this, with the purpose of discussing these issues. And what happened was really interesting in that what I think had started very much as a, when you went around the table, the women would talk about how they felt that they were not doing enough too. Example, that there was still a lot of internalization saying, I should be better at, I probably should be doing so-and-so, or this is my own fault because I know I should so-and-so. And what happened over time, I think, was everyone became quite aware of, hang on, maybe the game is a little bit rigged. After we had found out that there were some common issues and we were, had become better at maybe naming what those issues were and that they weren't all to be found inside ourselves. Some of them, of course, were. Sometimes you do need to work on yourself as well. But that there were certain things in our environments that were affecting us negatively. Then we started talking about what we actually wanted to do about that. And that's kind of where we then moved from the internal personal change into looking at how can we affect change in the organization around us. And I felt that was quite strong as well. We began to come up with kind of small different types of concrete ideas for events we wanted to hold, guidance we wanted to give to our peers or our supervisors, how we wanted to expand the discussion to include other people. And I think we managed that to some extent. I mean, for example, getting our quite a lot of the senior women, more than men, but in the organization to actually join in this discussion with us, which was quite strong, I think. And I think what I learned from this experience, well, was both this whole quite transformative process of moving from something quite personal into something that can then maybe become actual change down the line, but also what was necessary for that to happen. And seeing how I think this, I'm not sure I like the concept so much, but it was a little bit of feeling of safe space in this little group we had. I mean, we were just these five or six women in the beginning who didn't know each other very well, who started talking about something a little bit uncomfortable, and then it became gradually this space where we felt we were allowed to say things out loud and also disagree on things, because again, though we came from relatively similar backgrounds, we were not the same. We didn't have the same approaches to what we wanted to see in our work environment, or how we felt our gender affected us even, or how we would want our peers to behave always. And that's fundamentally because there is no one answer to that, right? That these things are so very personal. We'll all have been influenced by a myriad other factors than our gender. So our race and gender, our sexuality, our background in terms of our education, where we grew up, our parents, religion, nationality, so on. And this kind of intersectionality, of course, affects how we will talk about things like our gender. So that all kind of came into the discussion and gave some really interesting, I guess, space for discussions, but also showed us that there is no one right or wrong answer, but we need to be able to talk about these issues in a place where you feel it's safe to do so, where you know you're not going to get your head cut off for saying the wrong thing, the wrong thing being what the majority in the room maybe don't agree with.
Yeah, and on that question of safe spaces, I was wondering what you thought about engaging the more privileged party in the equation. So in this instance, men, like, what is the role of men in sort of creating behavioral change and also engaging in this kind of process? What do you think their approach should be and where their responsibilities lie what are the first few things that, if there's a guy listening to this thinking, well, I know that sometimes my behavior sounds like some of these things, which is difficult for other people. How do I start? How do I start to learn? How do I begin this conversation and this reflection?
Well, I think that one of the challenges for men in this has maybe been that they have not, maybe, I could be wrong here, I would guess maybe not had so much access to this kind of what I just referred to as a safe space to discuss these issues. And I still very much get a sense that there's a feeling of discomfort or even embarrassment in men to talk about issues related to their gender, and especially with other men. So I might have one-on-ones with men where they'll say, no, this sure doesn't sound nice, or I sometimes wonder about my own actions. But taking it further from there still, I think, feels uncomfortable to many men. Reasons why, so again, I'm kind of guessing here. I think part of it is maybe that I think some maybe feel that the kind of talking about things like this in this way is a bit too touchy-feely. Maybe it even feels a bit forced or imposed by women like me coming out and telling the men what they should be doing, how to be allies. And then I think also a lot of men feel under attack fundamentally from this agenda, this whole not all men, you're all accusing us of doing all these things, and then have a kind of a defensive reaction to that, which I fully understand where that's coming from. I just think we need to be moving beyond that at this stage. And I think one way we could do that is if men would start taking the initiative to maybe open these discussions with other men. So again, nothing really grand scale, if you ask me. I mean, if you ask me for one thing that I would like men to do going forward to change things in UNHCR or in society in general, it would really be, please just start talking about these issues. I mean, and you can kind of do it however you want. Again, I did it by inviting friends over for wine and then spending an hour of that evening discussing gender and how it felt to be women in the workplace. I would love if men would do something similar, invite some of their friends over, do whatever they feel like doing on a social evening, whether that's watching football or playing poker or discussing politics or knitting, whatever. And then at some point in the evening say, actually, okay, let's now just take an hour or maybe two and talk a bit about gender, masculinity, and how we feel these concepts play out in the context of our work, but also our personal life. And like it did for us, that will probably feel a little bit uncomfortable at first because it's a bit weird to get into, especially if you've just been watching a rowdy football game. But I'm pretty sure you would find what we found is that after a while, you kind of get into this space where it's more comfortable to talk about. It feels less awkward, and you start feeling it's safer to kind of share your thoughts on. I've had a number of conversations with men where I've suggested that they, in some form or the other, get involved with some of the gender movements, if you want to call it that, that are happening right now in the organization. And the response I've gotten on a number of occasions from them have been, oh, but I don't think I'm not quite the right guy for this. I'm not sure I have all the right opinions, or I think maybe sometimes I say inappropriate things. I think there's still a bit this fear that you need to have the checklist, that you need to, subscribe to all the right opinions and have read all the right books. Otherwise, again, the feminists will chop off your head. And I think it's really important that we move past this and say it's really not about that. It's just about daring to have this conversation. And then we can talk about where some of the approaches or thoughts you have might be problematic to me or the other way around. And we can learn from each other. But those conversations need to start happening if we want to change anything ever.
I think this may be a good point to segue to sort of the other thing I wanted to ask you about. Just because it's very interesting, you're now working in Somalia in a very particular context, which I'm sure comes with its own range of challenges, not just as a humanitarian worker, but as a woman. And I'd be very keen to hear about your experience and how you think in contexts like this, and there are many sort of similar contexts that UNHCR operates in, what is the particular challenge set, and how do we approach these types of conversations in places that have quite contrasting cultures and so on?
Yeah, that's a very good question also. I mean, what I'm living in right now would be, I guess, characterized as any e-duty station where you live in relatively confined quarters, and there's a quite fewer women than men. I think it's about 25% where I am here now in Somalia, in Mogadishu. And yes, that does create its own challenges. I mean, both, well, I think there are different aspects to that, or different elements to that. I think both the types of people who go to a place like this, or choose to go to a place like this, or have the option of going to a place like this, affect the environment. Obviously, the security affects the environment as well. High turnover makes things challenging, as always. So I think there's a bit of an understanding now that women have sometimes struggled to be in these types of environments because of the way they've been treated by men, fundamentally, that they've experienced quite a lot of sexism. Of course, that's in addition to it being tricky for some women to come to a place like this because they have children and don't want to leave their families, which some men have too, but it seems to be easier for a man to leave their smaller children behind in any case, to go to a place like this. But I think women have often faced issues of sexism or even sexual harassment or sexual abuse in duty station like this. And I do think there's an attempt to try to address that now. And I think it's going to take a while to effect that change because, again, there's a bit more focus now on no longer having impunity, that if someone, women are actually encouraged to report now, something should happen to them, and there is this no tolerance policy, at least in principle. The question of leadership, I think, is really interesting and one that I've actually thought quite a bit about, because it's one of the areas where I find I need to constantly revisit, kind of check in with myself and see if I'm acting the way I want to be acting and whether it's me or it's the organization that's wrong, so to speak. Because I do think we still, and I don't think actually this is limited to e-duty stations like the one I'm in. Perhaps it's a bit more of an issue in places like this, but I'm not even sure. But I do think there is still a tendency to see the male, typically white male native speaker, if I can be a bit crass, as the leader type. And I think one of the things that infuriates me the most, I'm lucky enough to not have experienced an awful lot of sexual harassment in my work, what I would term as sexual harassment, but what I have experienced quite a lot of and continue to experience quite a lot of is the sense of being ignored for lack of a better word, in rooms with, in particular in rooms with lots of other men. It's not always the case that it's men doing the ignoring, but it often is. Of course, if that all comes, there are different reasons for this. Part of it is I think, related to my gender. Part of it's also that I am relatively young. I look young and I sound young. I think those things together means that it's easy to dismiss me or to outright ignore me, certently in meetings, but also just kind of in interactions, which I have found I've faced quite a number of times, and it's really, really infuriating. So what I've been told sometimes in having this discussion with people is that I need to be making more of an effort, to be more vocal, to be more dominant, to be more kind of to change my style, as to kind of have to take on these stronger leadership qualities, to be heard in the meeting, to have a say. And my issue with that is I feel that I'm then being asked to play using rules that I didn't invent and that I am less, that are harder for me to play by, in the sense that I am not going to be all of a sudden transform myself into a 2-meter-tall middle-aged man with a booming voice. I can try my very best to get there, but I'm not going to get there. And to do so, I would have to change how I fundamentally am and interact, because it does not come naturally to me in a meeting or in interactions in general to be very very dominant, very, very loud, very, this is how we're going to do it. But I don't necessarily think that that's the best leadership style either. So what I would love is if we could start talking about different types of, whether you want to call it leadership styles, it can also just be kind of different types of employee styles, different ways to be a good employee, whether as a leader or just someone in a team, and what that means and how that can look different. Because I also don't think everyone should be like me. I recognize that there can be a time where you need someone with a booming voice to, you know, put his or her fist on the table. But we don't all need to be that person. And I would love if we could have a discussion on that as well, to see how can we recognize different styles in working in leadership, and different kind of take the best out of the different, recognize the qualities in the different styles and make best use of them, instead of thinking that there is one right way which we should all aspire to. The call to action would just be to start talking about it. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, for me, it's very much gender, but all the other issues we should be talking about those too, and they're all interlinked. So start talking about gender, start talking about race, start talking about ageism, start talking about having disabilities or not having disabilities, language skills, what all of this means to us in our work life and in our personal life as well. And try to not be too worried about getting it wrong, because none of us have it right. Some people are a bit louder and maybe sound like they have it right, but we don't. It's fundamentally a discussion about identity, and you can't get that right. So what we just need to do is to talk about it. Oh, yes. I think one of the things we're still slightly bad at is there's still some victim blaming going on, which I understand the background for, or I understand the intentions rather by, but I do think it's a problem. For example, when I first moved to Somalia, I was told very early on, I was recommended, someone tried to give me a good piece of advice, someone from staff welfare, in fact, telling me that, well, you know, when women have drinks or get drunk in the bar, they are putting themselves in a more vulnerable position. And I felt this was very problematic advice to give, not because I don't understand what it is she was trying to say, but because I imagine how I would feel if something were in fact to happen to me after I'd had a few drinks at the bar, which I have on a regular basis with my colleagues, as everyone else does. And I think there's still a bit of a tendency to try to put the onus on women. Similarly, I'll be told that I shouldn't go for runs on my own. And again, I think, why am I told I can't go for runs on my own when everyone else is going for runs on their own during daylight hours, I should add. And if it's because you really don't think I would be safe to do so, shouldn't you be addressing that instead of restricting my movement and trying to see what can we then do to put safeguards in place that means women can go for runs on their own without risking assault? So I think there's still a far bit way to go there on how we need to, I guess, shift the discussion a bit and turn the onus away from how women should self-police and how we can create working environments that are safer to women, for women to work in.